నమస్తే సరస్వతి దేవి గౌరవాన్ని ప్రచారమే నిర్విశేష శూన్య వారి పాశ్చాచుదేస్తాను. Hare Krishna, good morning to everyone today. You know, just continuing that enthusiasm that was there in the kirtan. Wow, that was nice. Thank you.
Yeah.
So this morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 23, the Brahmin's Wives Blessed, text number 31 through 35. We'll chant to 31 together, and then I'll read the translations and short purports that cover these verses. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So the word meaning Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, said, Pataya, your husbands, na abhyasuryena shiran, will not feel inimical, pitri, Bratra Suta Adaya, your fathers, brothers, sons, and others, Loka, the general populace, shall also va toward you, Maya, by me. Rupeta, advise Deva, the demigods, Api, even Anumanvate, regard favorably. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Patayo nava shurye ran. Pitri bratri sutadaya. Lokascha vo mayo peta. Deva apyanuvan manvate. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Patayo nabhya surye ran. Pritri bratri sutadaya. Lokas chavo mayo peta. Deva apyanumanvate. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Patiyo nabhya surye ran. Pritri bratri sutadaya. Lokas chavo mayo peta. Deva apyanuman yate vate.
Yeah.
Ladies. Thank you. Translation, the Supreme Personality of God had replied, "Rest assured that your husbands will not be inimical toward you, nor will your fathers, brothers, sons, other relatives, or the general populace. I will personally advise them of the situation. Indeed, even the demigods will express their approval." Text number 32. "For you to remain in my bodily association would certainly not please people in this world, nor would it be the best way for you to increase your love for me. Rather, you should fix your minds on me, and very soon you will achieve me." Purport. The Lord pointed out that people in general would not appreciate a loving affair between Lord Krishna, who superficially was appearing as a cowherd boy, and the wives of the Brahmana community. Also, the Brahmana ladies' own devotion and love would increase most effectively in separation. In other words, it would be best all around if they continued to fix their minds on Lord Krishna and thus went on with the process that they had been practicing throughout their lives. The Lord and his bona fide representative, the spiritual master, expertly engage the Lord's devotees in different types of service so that all of them can quickly return to his lotus feet. Text number 33. "It is by hearing about me, seeing my deity form, meditating upon me, and chanting my names and glories that love for me develops, not by physical proximity. Therefore, please go back to your homes." Text 34. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, "Thus instructed the wives of the Brahmins return to the place of sacrifice. The Brahmanas did not find any fault in their wives, and together with them they finished the sacrifice." Purport. The wives of the Brahmanas obeyed Lord Krishna's order and returned to the sacrificial arena of their husbands, whereas the gopis, although ordered by Krishna to go home, remained in the forest to dance with him through the full moon night. Both the gopis and the brahmanas' wives achieved pure love of Godhead. Text number 35. One of the ladies had been forcibly kept back by her husband. When she heard the others describe the Supreme Lord Krishna, she embraced him within her heart and gave up her material body, the basis of bondage to material activity. Purport. The lady described here was especially devoted to Lord Krishna. Upon giving up her material body, she immediately attained a spiritual body and left the sacrificial arena to join the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Agyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Srila Prabhupada was once on a morning walk in Mayapur, and if you know the scene there, at least the way it used to be, now it's a different thing. It used to be just open fields and countryside, marked with raised paths, which were actually the boundaries of the paddy fields, and so they used to walk along those raised paths. And so at one juncture on one day, there was a slight incline that Prabhupada had to go up. And so the devotees that were with him anxiously climbed the incline and then extended their hand down to Prabhupada to help him up that embankment. And when he got up the embankment, Prabhupada did something rather dramatic, as always, in the teaching mode to his disciples. So the devotee had grabbed Prabhupada's hand and was helping up, and when Prabhupada got to the top, he immediately threw the devotee's hand away. Threw it away like that. And then he explained that this is what the Mayavatis do. They take the help of the guru, of even worship of the deity, and then when they get to the higher platform, when they reach their destination, immediately they kick it off. Prabhupada said, and he said, he gave this example many times, just like climbing a ladder. And when you get to the top, you kick away the ladder. And so that's what the Mayavadis do. That's part of their practice or realization in spiritual life. Of course, that's not a very loving kind of interaction. Neither is it something that we, in the process of devotional service given by our acharyas, follow. And so what that means is that even practices which are there in the very beginning of our devotional service, our practice of sadhana bhakti, are not rejected when we get to higher platforms, higher levels of realization. They're not rejected. They may be experienced at a different level, and that's what we want to talk about this morning, how these basic devotional practices are not just basic, but are foundational to our entire life in devotional service, but how they may be experienced deeper according to our realizations. And to start the discussion, I want to give you Sri Rupa Goswami's definition of sadhana bhakti, as he presents in the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And when Rupa Goswami is writing the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he does it in a very systematic way. For instance, the definition of sadhana bhakti that he gives is a definition that points to the higher realizations that are to come. In other words, it's related. It's just not like an abstract definition that has nothing to do with where you're going on the path of advancement in the science of bhakti yoga presented in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Here's his definition. He says that, and I'm just giving the English translations here because if I tried to do the Sanskrit, it probably would just throw everyone off due to my mispronunciation. They think I'm saying something else than what I'm actually saying. That which is accomplished through engagement of the senses and through which bhava, spiritual emotion, is attained is called sadhana bhakti or bhakti in practice. So there are different elements here. Engagement of the senses. Engagement of the senses for what purpose? What is to be gained by that engagement of the senses? In other words, what's the result of the practices that one takes in sadhana bhakti is the arising of bhava or spiritual emotion in the heart of the participant. So you can see in later stages in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Nectar Devotion, different types of spiritual ecstasies in relationship with Krishna are explained. And they all constitute bhava or spiritual emotion. So sadhana bhakti is defined in terms of that goal, that which is accomplished through the engagement of the senses. That results in bhava or spiritual emotion. And so even the basic activities of devotional service, they can also be found in the highest expressions of bhava or love for Krishna. And we see that in this series of verses that we're studying today. Because Krishna is advising the wives of the brahmanas in text number 33, it is by hearing about me, seeing my deity form, meditating upon me, and chanting my names and glories that love for me develops, not by physical proximity. Therefore, please go back to your homes. So what do those things that Krishna is telling the Yajna Patnis, what do they remind you of? They remind you of what we do, but specifically there's Vani and Vapu, yeah. Service and separation. Let me give you a hint. We're talking about five things. Morning program, that's there off. The five most potent items of devotional service. What are the five most items of devotional service? Don't they really like parallel this verse? I mean, they're talking about hearing about me. So one of the items of devotional service is hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. It says, seeing my deity form. Another one of the five elements of the five most potent items of devotional service is to worship the deity. Right? And I think you get the idea. Meditating, chanting my names is another one. Chanting my names and glories. So, these five most potent items of devotional service are being advised by Krishna himself to the Yajna Patnis. Now, these Yajna Patnis aren't just ordinary living beings or living entities like us. They have the fortune, and it's described in a previous verse here, they're described as Mahabhaga. Extremely fortunate. Krishna himself calls them that. He says that Mahabhaga, welcome, O most fortunate ladies. Please sit down and make yourself comfortable. What can I do for you? That you have come here to see me is most appropriate. They're seeing Krishna face to face. They're sitting with him. He's complimenting them. He's happy to see them. Obviously, they are tremendously advanced devotees of the Lord. They're not ordinary living beings. Yet they're being advised to do the same things that we're advised to do in the very beginning stages of sadhana bhakti. I mean, we're talking about Vaidhi sadhana bhakti. Not if you're into Raganuga as being higher than Vaidhi, which I don't necessarily think is correct. But if you're into that, then this is even more basic. It's Vaidhi sadhana bhakti. Rules and regulations are there. But the same activities are being described. Engage yourself in these kind of things. Saru Sangha, Bhagavat Shravana, Mathura Vasa, Srimurti Seva, Nam Sankirtan. These five most potent items of devotional service are being advocated for even the advanced devotees like these Yajna Patnis. So, we should be very careful about these things and not think that, like the Mayavadis, that as we become advanced, these things can be kicked away. No, they're very, very important. And I want to illustrate that with some examples from a couple, maybe two or three, of the five, not all five of them this morning. Let's start with deity worship. Deity worship as sadhana. And Prabhupada, he introduced deity worship and to regulate the devotees, particularly like Mangal Arati. In I think it's 69, 70, some of you that were there may know better than I. devotees were going out on Harinam Sankirtan, and they would stay out very late. They'd stay out midnight, you know, one, you know, Hollywood Boulevard chanting. And when they came back, you know, they obviously weren't getting up, you know, and Prabhupada noticed that things were a little unregulated. And so he introduced that the devotee should rise for Mangalarti. And Mangalarti means there's some deity worship going on at that time. So Prabhupada introduced the deity worship as a way to regulate the devotees, to make them clean in their behavior and in their consciousness. And so certainly that's an aspect, regularity, punctuality, all these rules and regulations of deity worship are there, and they're meant to affect us. They're meant to affect us in our heart, how we approach Krishna. We're meant to see the deity with great devotion. And there's so many festivals built around the deities. We're coming into the season now. Lord Balaram's appearance, Julan Yatra, Janmastami, Radhastami. So many wonderful opportunities for service and absorption come in terms of worshiping the deity. And so that's something not only experienced in the beginning stages, but even in the highest stages, the deity worship is important. And here's an example. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left home to take sannyas, he left behind Vishnupriya, his wife. Obviously, he knew that Vishnupriya was going to suffer terribly in separation from him when he wasn't there. And so he did something about that. Does anybody know what he did about that as when he left? What did he do about that? Anybody can say? He gave her a deity. Yes, he gave her a deity. That deity is still in Mayapur today. Sri Dameshwar Mahaprabhu. Let me just read a little bit about this and how Vishnupriya accepted this deity and the deity worship. This beautiful Neem deity of Gauranga Mahaprabhu is the deity that Vishnupriya, wife of Lord Gauranga, worshipped for 80 years after Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. Srimati Vishnupriya was 16 years old when Gauranga Mahaprabhu left, and she worshipped this deity as her husband until she passed away at the age of 96. The deity's hands reach forward with upraised arm, a pose indicating, I am yours. There are also wooden shoes which were worn by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He gave them to Srimati Vishnupriya, which she worshipped until she passed away. And so, Vishnupriya, the consort of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I don't think we can imagine the type of separation, the feelings of love she was feeling for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But to pacify those feelings, she was given deity worship. She was given deity worship. Worship this deity of me, and how? As your husband. As her husband, she worshipped the deity. I think that's a little bit advanced from a new devotee accepting deity worship as a process of sadhana bhakti. Where there's awe and reverence almost in the start of the worship. So she worshipped, you know, as her husband, with that mood in worshipping the deity of Mahaprabhu. Another instance of sort of separation was Hanuman. When Lord Ramachandra went back to the spiritual world, he took everyone with him, but he told one person to stay behind. In this material world, right? He told Hanuman, you have to stay back. But what did he do to pacify him? Does anybody know what he did to pacify him? He gave him deities of Sitaram. He gave him deities of Sitaram, told him, you worship me in my deity form. And this way you'll be pacified in your separation from me. So another devotee in another kind of mood. Obviously, Hanuman is more worshiping Krishna as a servant, whereas Vishnupriya is worshiping as his wife. So different transcendental moods, but through the deity, worshiping the Lord through the deity. And even the Goswamis, we know that the Goswamis are famous each for establishing a temple in deity worship in Vrindavan. And they did that in a glorious way. There's an interesting version or retelling of the history of Sanatan Goswami with his deity Madan Gopal, and how Madan Gopal told him he wanted some salt because he couldn't eat the chapatis, the dry chapatis. Well, not chapatis, even the type of flour that he was getting, but bhati he was getting. So I just wanted to read a little bit of that because it's humorous. This is from a book by Prabhupada's godbrother, Adi Keshavadas, Dr. O.B.L. Kapoor. And he says in here how Prabhupada instructed him to write this book. He dedicates the book to Prabhupada. But this is a story we're all familiar with, and it tells how the deity came to Sanatan Goswami and how they interacted. Sanatan Goswami was also entrusted by Mahaprabhu with the task of rediscovering and revival of the holy Vrindavan. He lived in Vrindavan on a Dichatila on the bank of Yamuna, but went to Mathura for Madhukari, because at that time there was no human habitation in Vrindavan. Once he happened to go to the house of Damodar Chobe. There he saw the beautiful image of the deity Madan Gopal. The image stole his heart. He was lost in Bhava Samadhi. He wished he had the opportunity of offering his loving service to Madan Gopal. He tried to suppress the desire. What was the use of entertaining a desire which could not be fulfilled? It was futile to think that the Chobe family would give away their thakur to him. Even if they did, how and where could he get all the means to serve him as well as the Chobe family did? But it was not possible to suppress the desire. The more he tried to suppress it, the stronger it grew. Now, this is describing his relationship with the deity Madan Gopal, not, you know, seeing Krishna, you know, running around Vrindavan and things, but with the deity, he's having these intense desire to render his service there. He went to the Chobe house again and again on the pretext of Madhukari and returned after Madan Gopal's darshan. Madan Gopal could not remain unaffected by the seed of bhava and the bhakti that had sprouted in the heart of Sanatan. The day the desire for the loving service of Madan Gopal arose in the mind of Sanatan, it evoked a similar desire in the mind of Madan Gopal. He began to long for the loving service of Sanatan. As Sanatan's attraction toward him increased, his attraction towards Sanatan also increased. There was no end to Sanatan's happiness and astonishment when one day Chobe's wife, who had motherly affection for Madan Gopal and had served him lovingly, said to him in a sorrowful mood with tears running down her cheeks, "Baba, from today you have to accept the responsibility of service of Madan Gopal. Gopal has now grown up and become restive and unmanageable. He does not want to remain under the protection of his mother. He asked me in a dream yesterday night to give him to you. I have become old and imbecile and therefore cannot serve him well. It is in his interest that I entrust him to someone who can serve him well." So the attraction between the devotee and the deity developed in that way, and Sanatan Goswami accepted the service. But Madan Gopal, he had some concerns. Sanatan Goswami built another straw hut near his own in which he installed Madan Gopal. For his bhoga, he would depend on Madhukari. From the flour he got in Madhukari, he prepared bhati by kneading flour, rolling it into balls, and baking the balls on fire. Actually, my wife and I had this one time in Vrindavan. We were doing the prikrama, and we were just by Keshigat, and there was a family there, a pilgrim family, and they were making this bhat. They just had some flour, they got water from the Yamuna, and just threw it in the fire. it was an interesting experience. He offered bhakti to Madan Kopal with saltless and spiceless vegetable, prepared from the leaves he collected from the forest. Madan Gopal kept on somehow swallowing this fare for a few days, hesitating to complain about it. But he could not carry it on indefinitely. One day he said to Sanatan in a dream, "Sanatan, I find it difficult to swallow your balls of flour with leaves boiled without salt. You have to push them down my throat forcibly. How long can I continue to do so? Why not give me some salt along with these?" Tears of love trickled down the eyes of Sanatan. In utter happiness, he said in all humility with folded hands, "Prabhu, you know that your humble servant is a recluse without any wherewithal for your service. You ask for salt today, tomorrow you may ask for molasses, and then Rajbhog. How shall I manage? I have been enjoined by Mahaprabhu to follow the ideal of a Vaishnava Vairagi, who is supposed not to ask for anything from anyone and remain content with whatever he gets in Madhukari. You know that in Madhukari people give flour but no salt." So he had this exchange with the deity. Now, undoubtedly, Sanatan Goswami, all the Goswamis, they are capable of direct darshan of Krishna. But we see here that he's interacting with the deity, because there are different levels at which this most potent item of devotional service can be experienced. Just quickly, a couple of the other processes and how they can be experienced more deeply. Bhagavat Shravana, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's meant to be relished. If Madan Gopal was here, he would tell us he would want to relish. He's always relish. So what does a relish mean? It means that there's some very sweet flavor there that's the result of discussion, of interaction. So daily we have the Bhagavatam class here, you know, but sometimes it may not facilitate that kind of relishing. And what I mean by that, it may be a little formal. Someone's sitting up here, you're sitting there, there's some talk coming down, as opposed to just two devotees or three devotees or small group of devotees getting together and discussing their realizations. And everyone doesn't sit up here. I mean, like a lot of the ladies, they don't sit up here. They go, "Oh, I'm not going to sit up there and give class." Not just the ladies, but anyone. They may feel like a little intimidated by the atmosphere in which the Bhagavatam class is done. So that may inhibit the relishing of the Bhagavatam. So therefore, not only should it be done in settings like this, but it should be done in smaller groups of devotees. They get together and they share the realization. I know that goes on here in this community in different ways, and so I'm just advocating that devotees get together and they discuss their realizations of the Bhagavatam, because that is where we're meant to get our satisfaction. Our love for Krishna. Recall, Krishna's advising the Yajnavalkyas that by hearing about me, seeing my deity form, meditating on me, chanting my names, that's how love for me develops. That's how you get spiritual feeling. So we should try to do that. And as I said, if the atmosphere is not, you know, conducive to relishing it in a way in which we get to express our realizations and others can hear our realizations, then put yourself in that kind of situation, because that's where we get the taste in devotional service to carry us through the rough spots. So that's a point about hearing how it can be done at different levels. And then finally, sadhu sangha. Sadhu sangha also can be done at different levels. I was just hearing this morning before I came to the temple a talk by His Holiness Bhanu Swami Maharaj. And he was talking about Krishna's mercy. And who are the agents of Krishna's mercy? He was talking about like electric current that comes from the powerhouse. So it comes in a powerhouse, and that's Krishna's mercy, the powerhouse, and it comes in. But then it has to come out somewhere. Where does the power come out? So the power, the electric current, or the mercy of Krishna comes out through the devotees. Through the devotees. So, in associating with devotees, that's where we can get the mercy of Krishna. So we should try to, you know, get ourselves an association of devotees. And there's an interesting word in the Sanskrit definition of this practice of devotional service. And it says, snigda. I know if, you know Mukunda. If Mukunda was here, I know he would jump all over that because he likes that word, snigda, because he brings it up a lot in his comments in the class. Snigda. What does it mean? It means that there's some soft, tender, gentle nature, snigda, that kind of a relation is there. So there should be something like that among the devotees. We should have such a relationship. Now, granted, we may not have it with everybody, and that's just the nature of reality. But there has to be some devotee association that comes to this quality of... it says here, among such persons, one should seek a devotee who is snigdha, soft. This means that his or her heart should be affectionate, not harsh, having been melted by the splendid rays of the rising sun of Bhava Bhakti. So we should seek out that kind of association. That will keep us safe. That will keep us safe. There are so many things that can deviate us or send us in the wrong direction. But snigdha, that kind of relationship will bring us back. I remember one time I gave a class in the Mayapur during the Mayapur festival, and I was telling them about a friend of mine who said to me, we kind of like mutually made a pledge like this, you know, he said that if I ever do anything that's not correct, I want you to take me out back in the woods and shoot me. So, so the point is that we have to have someone that can, you know, slap us upside the head, you know, and that will be helpful to us. So, these are some thoughts on these matters. Any comments or questions anyone has? Yes, Dr. Nagaraj, is that you?
I'm not gonna ask a technical philosophical question, but I know you've been worshiping your own deity, Giriraj, for many, many years, steadily every day. And I wonder if you could just tell us something about your own experience, what this has meant to you to worship Giriraj all these years.
Yeah, we've been fortunate to worship Giriraj and now Girirani with him. One thing, it's very steadying, you know, it's a steadying influence in life. It starts out, you know, as an obligation. Well, I'm taking this service, and that means I have to do it every day, and other things that would take up my time have to take a secondary role to that. So that's been very helpful in my own service over the years. But it's also a pleasure. Prabhupada talked about deity worship, and he said that you do it according to rules and regulations, but then after a while you think, well, I could do it this way and it would look nicer. And he said that's the starting of love, actual love, that you know, you think I could do it better. And so I've seen that, I like to do a nice smile on Giriraj every day and decorate him with some gopi dots, and I get some satisfaction from doing that. I mean, I don't want to give any kind of indication, like, you know, in any way advance or anything, but... he hasn't complained about the prashadam yet, but I hope that someday that can be there. Yeah.
I was yesterday... watching a video of Srila Prabhupada in Australia. And the devotees in Australia, you know, how Srila Prabhupada came the first day that he came to Australia. There were like three bhaktas, first time they never seen Krishna or nothing like that. And Prabhupada says, you know, anyway, we have to do initiation. He went to Australia, and in one day he initiated. The second time he came, he brought some deities.
Mm.
But the devotees didn't know nothing, absolutely nothing about the deities. Then Srila Prabhupada left the deities, and, you know, he didn't take care of the deities. When he came back the third time, the deities were very beautiful decorated.
Mm.
And then Srila Prabhupada told this Mataji, I was very worried when I left Krishna here, so I told Krishna to instruct you within how to take care of himself, and I can see that he's done so.
Mm. Yes.
So I was just realizing when you were talking that it's all by Srila Prabhupada's mercy that somehow or another we can even get to, you know, even surf or sea or whatever. It's by his unlimited mercy that somehow or another, you know, Krishna takes the role of, oh, okay, you know, you are allowed to serve me or something like that.
Yeah, thank you. Let me tell everyone a little something about Premananda Gaur Prabhu here. As I said, there are different ways in which, or different levels in which you can experience aspects of devotional service. Like accepting the remnants of the deity, like flowers, and then you're supposed to smell those things, right? Now, you can just smell it, or you can do like Premananda Gaur. I saw him one time. He got some flowers. He got his... He was like so much into smelling. I thought, wow. I never saw anybody get so much into like smelling the garlic. He just took it in, you know. So that's an example. He's deeply diving into that item of devotional service, and he's getting the benefit. Krishna enjoys such reciprocation. So that's very nice. His enthusiasm is instructive to us. Yeah. I didn't mean to embarrass you, but I wanted to. Ever since I saw that, I thought, wow.
I'm happy you focus on this verse today. Last week I was trying to quote it, and some devotees couldn't remember it. Can you reread it back? The one with Lord Krishna telling the wives that you have to see me and my worship me. Yeah, can you read the verse back?
It is by hearing about me, seeing my deity form, meditating upon me, and chanting my names and glories that love for me develops, not by physical proximity. Therefore, please go back to your homes. That's the one?
Yeah. I think this is a key verse that we should memorize. It, so.
Mm. Yeah? Yes, Marikata Singh.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the nice class. I was just wondering about the last lady, if you could comment a little more about the one who was... She was held back forcibly, and then seems like she was at a different level, maybe a little more advanced than the other ones.
Well, I don't know so much. I don't know how much I can say about that. Although I have heard some descriptions of, because some of the gopis also were held back by their husbands and not allowed to go for the rasa dance. And I heard somewhere someone gave some kind of analysis about different levels of advancement or why they were held back, but I don't know anything about that, so I can't really say much. Sorry. Anything else, Madam?
Thank you also for the wonderful class. You mentioned three of the five processes, worshipping the deity, hearing Bhagavatam, and chanting the glories of the Lord. Would you kindly mention the other two?
Okay. The five are sarusanga, associating with devotees, Bhagavat Shravana, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Maturavasa, it's actually Maturavasa Nam Bhajan, living in Mathura and engaging in Nam Sankirtan, chanting the holy names. Srimurti Seva is number four, and Nam Sankirtan, directly chanting the holy names, is number five. Those are the five listed, five most potent items of devotional service. Well, let me just read the complete...
I think you missed Sadhu Sangha.
No, I said that. That's number one here. But Maturavasa Srinam Bhajan is situated at the root of residents in Vrindavan or Sri Mayapur. The sadhus living in or visiting these holy places are always engaged in Nam Sankirtan. So, living in the holy Dham just doesn't mean like living there. I mean, you're living there for a purpose. These are the five most potent items of devotional service, sadhana bhakti. And sadhana bhakti is meant to be performed for the purpose of arousing emotion, spiritual emotion, bhava, bhava bhakti. So living in the holy Dham naturally would go along with chanting the names and glories of Krishna, because otherwise there's all kinds of living entities and people that live in the holy Dham. Now, are all of them Brijbasis? Well, in one sense, you know, Pundarik Prabhu can say better since he's lived there. In one sense, yes, but in one sense, no. I mean, but if you're living there, it has to be with a purpose, and it's described here, not Matura Vasa Srinam Bhajan, living there and chanting the holy names. So they go together in that way. Now, chanting the holy names is something that may be done outside of Matura Vasa also, you know. So that may be the difference, you know. We chant Hare Krishna anywhere and everywhere, not just in Matura or not just in the temple, but everywhere.
Okay. But doesn't Krishna say that wherever my names are chanted, my glory is that is Vrindavan?
Yes. So for the devotees, every place is Vrindavan. So they're chanting and living in Vrindavan wherever they are to engage in chanting the holy name. Yeah, so. Let me see if there's anybody else.
I just wanted to share something that I read yesterday. Actually, it's the first time that I read this quote of Srila Prabhupada, and really struck me. Mm. It struck me so much that I called my wife in Canada, and I told her, sit down, you need to read this. And she thought that, you know, it was a citation from taxes or something like that. But actually, you know, Srila Prabhupada says that, because, you know, I'm just giving a realization that I have, that just like my father, you know, we grow up very wealthy, and he used to tell us, just learn how to work and appreciate what you have, because one day all of this is going to be gone. So sometimes, you know, we have so much Krishna that sometimes, you know, we don't appreciate actually how lucky we are. That's my realization. Mm-hmm. That since I don't live here in Alachua, you know, that's one of Krishna's mercy on me. It's like a sweet and sour chutney stuff, because, you know, even though we're here, but I don't live here, so I'm always like hankering. But anyway, Srila Prabhupada says that even if a soldier is chopped down his head away from his shoulders and he's laid down in the battlefield, and if he's a good soldier, even in that condition, headless, he falls into the ground, he still will try to use his arm and strike the enemy even without a head in the ground. In the same way, Srila Prabhupada says that, you know, I am in the army of my Guru Maharaj. He was laying on his bed and he waved his arm like if he was in the battlefield. Mm-hmm. And he says that, I'm in the army of my Guru Maharaj, and, you know, until my last breath I should preach. Mm-hmm. Then he's quiet, and then he says, love, live long and preach. Mm. And my realization is that, you know, yesterday I didn't make it in the morning program because I have two bhaktas from Orlando. You know, I was in Orlando drowning. And now that you're speaking about Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, yesterday in the morning I opened the Krishna art book. And I have never, you know, read so much Srimad Bhagavatam until I was giving it to these boys. Mm. Because they were asking me like little children, wow, who's that? You know, with those. And I'm like, oh my God, I get to explain to them. So, you know, sometimes, you know, I mean, if we don't give it out, we don't even know what we have. So that's my realization, that Srila Prabhupada is giving us so much, and he says that even in his last. So I just think that sometimes, you know, we need to also, like, realize that, you know, there is a lot of people out there that don't even have an idea about Srila Prabhupada's books. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we have them, and I don't appreciate them. So that's one of the realizations that I wanted to share.
Oh, I think that's very nice. Thank you. And we'll end there.